sprint out action. Right side by Mahomes. All kinds of time. Pump faking. Now fires it. But he's caught in the end zone to Marcus Robinson. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Snap, looking left. Still looking left. Now throwing left. Has Mike Williams. Jumps, catches. Touchdown, Chargers. Mike Williams.
That was huge.
Rivers in the shotgun. Looks to the right for Mike Williams. Throws to Mike Williams. Caught. Touchdown. Touchdown, Chargers. Mike Williams with his third of the day. And this is the game. Shotgun snap. Rivers rolls to the right. Throws to the end zone. Caught. It's good. It's good. Mike Williams with the grab. Chargers lead 29-28. Still 4 seconds left in this game. There was no one. The closest Chief was in Kansas City, Kansas.
Oh, Matt Money Smith, the voice of the Around the NFL podcast with the call, and a beautiful call by Money. The Los Angeles Chargers on a Philip Rivers to Mike Williams touchdown from 1 yard out. And then the onions for days for Anthony Lynn. They go for two. And, yes, Williams wide open on a busted coverage. The two-point conversion also good. And that was it. The Chargers stun the Chiefs. I mean, you want to talk about stunning defeats. Ones that stick to your ribs. The Chiefs eat it here. The Chargers win 29-28. And all of a sudden, there is a tie atop the AFC West. Both teams, 11-3. And the schedule, the way it sets up, the Chargers have a chance here to steal the West. And who would have thought that was possible? Dan Hans is here solo to get us going on our Thursday night recap and preview show. The rest of the boys will join me in a few minutes. But we got to break down this game. The Chargers score 15 points in the final 3:49 of regulation. This was a TNF game for the ages. And it is, for me, another example of this is not the same old Chargers. And, you know, we talked about that 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh when, like in this game, where the Chargers fell behind 14-0 on the road in Arrowhead, and you're thinking they're cooked. And they came back in this game 2 weeks ago against Pittsburgh. They fall behind by multiple scores going into the half at Pittsburgh. They come back and win that game. That was a game the Chargers never win. Last week even, the home game against Cincinnati, a classic moment where the Chargers of old stub their toe against an inferior opponent and just kind of blow their season or cost themselves dearly in a classic trap game. They don't do that. They take care of business, okay? But you're not going to hand out a lollipop because a good team should take care of business at home against a bad team like the Bengals. But this game, let there be no doubt that this is a new Chargers team. And I want to point out one play that's going to kind of get forgotten in all the drama of this game. And it was a great game, my goodness. And the end of this game, in the fourth quarter in particular, it will be forgotten. But if you want to talk about how this is not the same old Chargers, after they pull within seven in the fourth quarter and they get a stop and they make the Chiefs punt deep in their own territory, Desmond King catches the ball on the Chargers' side of the 40 and muffs it. He muffs the punt. And any other Chargers team through the years, he muffs that punt, he kicks it away 3 or 4 yards, the opposing team falls on it, and the next day, or the old Zeuser here in the studio is talking about, oh, they were all set up, the Chargers, they would have had the ball near midfield with a chance to tie or even go for the win, and they blew it, and the Chiefs sneak away because the Chargers couldn't look in the mirror and got scared off by the reflection. But no, that's not what happened. The Chargers retain possession. Desmond King falls on his own fumble, and then the great Philip Rivers goes to work on the final drive, which covered 8 plays and 60 yards. And most importantly, well, the most important thing is that they scored a touchdown. But also important was the way it all played out. When they finally do get in the end zone and a big DPI call set them up near the goal line ahead of that, there's only 4 seconds on the clock. Okay? And that means no chance for the Chiefs to make a comeback. And that was equally important because you could imagine a scenario where the Chiefs then get the ball back and forget about it. They score and the game ends. But it doesn't work out that way. The Chargers win the game, and I'm shocked talking about it because the Chiefs were in control of this game. Like I said, they jump out 14-0, and it certainly looked at first like it would be a 3.5-hour tribute to Patrick Mahomes, which would be earned because he entered this game as the MVP favorite, and I still think he probably wins MVP. But they had that incredible first drive where they just march down the field after a Rivers interception, and Mahomes does another thing. Like, he's a quarterback that can only he does things that no other quarterback can do. He lulled the Chargers defense to sleep and then just kind of flung it into the end zone to get him on the board. They score the next possession as well, and it's 14-0, and you're thinking, my goodness. But then the Chargers defense held and got it together and picked it up. And you have to give credit also. At first it felt like the Chiefs defense, that would be the story of this game, that their ability with the offense kind of went into a slump after the first two scores, but they sacked Phil Rivers on their defense, sacks Phil Rivers four times, causes forces two interceptions. And you think they're going to take care of business, but the Chargers kept charging and held the Chiefs to 28 points. The Chiefs have scored at least 25 points in 19 straight games, which is an NFL record. But you have to say, and we talked about this on the podcast when we previewed this show, that if you hold the Chiefs under 30, you got to find a way to win. And it would have been bitterly disappointing if the Chargers held the Chiefs under 30 and couldn't score enough points, but they did. They scored just enough points. They scored 29 points to 28. My other thoughts about this game, as impressive as you can be, and Phil Rivers, after that slow start in the first half, again reminded us why he's such an – maybe Mahomes is the more exciting quarterback, but Rivers is an all-timer, and this goes down. This is going to be one of his great – stories one day when he's inducted into Canton, and who knows where this season goes, because he can go anywhere for the Chargers now, but this is one of his greatest moments. And the fact that he did it without Melvin Gordon in the backfield, who was out for the third straight game with that knee injury, without Keenan Allen, who went out of the game with a hip injury, and he found a way, and he turned Mike Williams into a number one receiver. And if Mike, this is the, this hopefully is a wake-up call to the Chargers to make Mike Williams a bigger part of their offense. The rushing touchdown, two receiving touchdowns, and the two-point catch. This guy can play ball. So they are really set up, and we'll see how the Chiefs go from here. They have to go to Seattle now, and this is what I was talking about, why you have a shot here if you're the Chargers to steal this division. The Chargers have home to Baltimore and at Denver. Not easy slate the rest of the way, but they can win 12 here. They can get to 13. Perhaps here, and going to Seattle, the way Seattle's playing right now is going to be a tough ask for Mahomes. So if he's going to win MVP, he's going to earn it, and that includes going into Seattle and getting a win. And my final thought on the game, and I'm glad it kind of got pushed aside because of the theatrics and the incredible way this game ended, but the officiating, I mean, you got to get out of the way, guys. Come back to us, officials. Some of these ticky-tack calls, especially against the Chargers, it felt like if you're a Chargers fan, I'm sure you're ripping your hair out. You're on the road. You're playing your heart out, and you can't seem to get a call to go your way. And now Chiefs fans will counter with, well, what about that DPI on the Chargers' final drive? Well, Mike Pereira said it was a penalty. It's good enough for me. Right, Cam?
You know it.
Pereira's like the one guy I trust when it comes to this you throw it to these, half these officials that are retired that they get hired. They were incompetent to start with, and they're either half in a coma or so old that they might not even hear what the announcers are saying. Pereira, I buy into that guy.
He's in the booth for a reason, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Anyway, so there you go. Great game. And we got more games to get to. All of the Week 15 action is previewed right now, and I will rejoin the rest of my friends. I go, oh, that's right, Kim. Well, I don't know where Wes is at right now, but
parting gift.
Wes, who has a slim advantage over the Sizzler in the lock challenge, he picked the Chiefs in this game. who were ahead for 59 minutes and 56 seconds. All right, that's it. Let's get to the rest of the Week 15 action.
The Around the NFL podcast is part of Tamposi's plot to overthrow NFL Network.
Makes sense. Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
How is everybody on this Thursday? You heard at the top of the show, the old Zeuser broke down the great Thursday night football matchup between the Chargers and Chiefs. And it is another benchmark for the season. No more Thursday night games now. And now you got Christmas right around the corner.
We're
Mark,
here.
It's over, Mark. The whole season's over, basically. We are in the home stretch.
It's far from over.
My dog,
but we,
Mark, with a C.
Hello. We are closer to what I consider the biggest celebration of the year, the end of the regular season, when you can wave farewell to
Peace.
A wild rash of trash bag franchises that can go try to figure their act out and come back again next September, but go away. We don't have to see you again in your putrid operations until next year.
I'm a sucker. I'll miss Thursday night football. Like, I legitimately get excited that, okay, there's a game only 2 days away. Like, I'm excited. Saturday's cool that you get a little extra day of football.
It's fun. Love it.
Saturday football games and stuff. Like,
When is the last time?
I'm a sucker for it.
In our life that the Jets and Browns were both on primetime, not primetime, but national television on the same day.
Yeah, I mean, I wish the circumstances were a little bit more
probably
exciting.
Probably when they played in the playoffs in 1986.
I do like it's going to be fun, a Saturday, and we're going to get to those games first. In fact, let's get to the games. Let's start with the Saturday games. What the hell? Let's just do it. Right, Wes?
Yeah, I'm on board.
Wes wearing the evolutionary Fred Rogers sweater that I quite enjoy. I like it.
Fred Rogers, one of my favorite Americans of all time. I thought that was the movie of the year.
Great, yes. That would definitely be on my top 10 list, Won't You Be My Neighbor. And when you have children, Wes, and it's not too far away, because let me tell you something.
Barnaby's on the way, huh?
Yeah. You're getting married in May, and there will be very little honeymoon period. Just that's my prediction. There will be I think I mapped this out
like 2 years ago. There's no traveling the country together. No.
You've been traveling the country for the last 20 years.
You've been on a journey, my friend, that's coming to an end. A new journey begins, and it includes a child in 2020.
I mean, you got 4+ decades in, so it's okay.
Look, I'm a man who made use of my free time for a lot of years.
My point being is that all of
that's not necessary.
All of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood is on Amazon, and I've been introducing it to my children.
Oh, great.
And it's great. That's beside the point. What we got to focus on is Saturday football, starting with the Houston Texans 9-4. They got picked off at home by the Colts last Sunday, a 3-point loss, and now they get to get a chance to get right again against the Jets, who are 4-9, but showed a little bit of fight, Mark Sessler. Last Sunday in Buffalo against a good Bills defense, wiping out a big deficit and winning the game late in the fourth quarter. So maybe with Sam Darnold playing, this is a game that is going to challenge the Texans.
I'll let you guys talk about the Texans a little bit, but when I think about this game, and as I just mentioned, this is a prime opportunity for the Jets and Jets fans to sit down and watch Sam Darnold have the game that we can think about all offseason. You're on national television, you're at home, and what I would love to see is more of what happened in the second half against the Bills. He made two incredible throws. One was this on-the-run reverse field touchdown toss to Robbie Anderson, and then down with seconds to go in the game, hit him on what I thought was best throw of the entire season, which they've not let him do, and they finally did. I want more of that and less of the haphazard sort of toss the ball into double coverage interception he had in the first half and what could have been a second. This is the game where why not go punch for punch with Deshaun Watson? The Texans have given up like 350 yards passing 2 games in a row. You know, let's try to see that. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm unrolling what I think could be a new nickname for Darnold for this game if he gets it done.
Whoa.
Unfurling it.
Are you going to wait unless he wins?
No, right now.
Right now.
All right, let's get it going. S-Darn. Because listen, no, because if he's good.
Okay, I'll hear you out.
If he does something really well, you could be like, S-Darn. But if he Fs up, you'd be like, oh, S-Darn.
Darn
it. It's very flexible.
S-Darn it.
Sure.
Okay.
Do you like it?
It's in the workshop.
But I mean, it makes you think
of like the S word and darn, both of which aren't positive.
Censored. Darn.
Yeah, like that. Like you spin it positive. But I am so confident that the Jets are going to get this done.
Whoa.
That I am going to watch it at 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific, exclusively on NFL Network.
Oh, nice promo.
Nice promo,
you
bro.
You got me in there.
Good job.
I like that.
Wait, you like that he did the promo?
Well, yeah, at least he's, you know, yeah.
Someone was gonna
I'm a company man, and, you know, I think Colleen's at the stadium for that game. It's exciting.
Man, Colleen's getting a workout. They're centered all over the place.
I think the Jets have a shot in this game. A shot. I mean, the Texans have some defined weaknesses. Their offensive line and Watson seem to struggle with blitzes. I think the Jets in their best games this year cook up a lot of pretty creative blitzes. Bowles can do that. They don't have a natural pass rush, but you would think they would just blitz the heck out of Watson, which the Colts did a good job of last week. They don't really have a third receiver. When you have to play Joe Webb as a third receiver, you're in trouble. And they might get Kiki QT back this week. It sounds like hopefully he's healthy. And that's a big loss. That's been a big loss for them, weirdly. And then they have Sharice Wright playing starting cornerback, who no matter what team he's on, it's like he's the weakness of the defense. He's been on a different decent team every year for the last 4 years.
That could be changing.
It just gets targeted. Maybe that's changing, but I'm just saying they have some weaknesses.
Good thing to have on your resume.
Aaron Colvin's been out for almost 2 months, and he just came back last week, I think. And I think you'll see Andre Howell play more, and I think they want Sharice Wright to play less.
The same concern, Mark, that you had 2 weeks ago against the Browns was, well, how does my offensive line stack up against the pass rush of the Texans? Well, the truth of the matter is that the Browns, as you know, Mark, have been much improved in pass protection lately. The Jets, that whole line stinks, and it's probably that's one of their big offseason projects is going to be to overhaul that line. So that is my concern, is that Darnold, and you want to see him to progress, but if he doesn't have any time to throw and a rookie quarterback, it's a recipe for disaster. So I don't feel good about the game, but you know what I do feel good about? I cannot remember the last time in like the 8 years I've worked here that Daddy's been able to pour a couple Tito's and watch a Jets game with the sun out.
It's been a while.
It's a strange combination of events, but yeah, it's probably never at the NFL Network.
It has not happened. Let's move on. So I'm not maybe get a little drunk, not like sloppy drunk, but feel a little buzz, and maybe if S Darn gets hot, it's going to be the best Saturday in a long
time.
Let's
see where we are when the Browns game's happening after that.
All right, right after the Jets wrap up their surprise win over the Texans at the Meadowlands, they will throw it to the Cleveland Browns, who are 5-7-1, as we talked about in Wednesday's show. They have a chance, a very small chance, but a chance to be in position to steal the AFC North if things go right, if everything goes right, and get back to the playoffs for the first time since
2002.
But here's their opponent, the Denver Broncos, Chris Wessling, who are coming off a embarrassing loss at San Francisco. Seems to set up well for the Brownies.
Yeah, what you have here is your classic clash of the Chubbs.
Good call.
A little Chubb on Chubb action.
Yeah, two of the best rookie classes in the league, and you have the Browns bypassing Bradley Chubb to take Denzel Ward, who won't play because he's concussed. Two straight weeks he's out. And the hotshot rookie, of course, is Baker Mayfield, who leads the NFL in yards per attempt since Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley were fired. That is amazing.
It's unreal. I mean, his first half he had last week, I think, ranks with any half just about that any quarterback had all season.
It was phenomenal.
Goff, well, and if you pack
Goff
that
against Minnesota. I mean, there were some others, but the variety of the throws. Of course, the first throw of the game, which was just outrageous.
The one to Njoku.
But the touch the variety in terms of the touch he can throw to Njoku. But then the throw that really got me was when he flattened out the 55-yarder to Jarvis Landry. And so he's like a pitcher that can throw at any speed. And he knew with the way that play was setting up, he couldn't throw one of those rainbows in there. He had to flatten it out 55 yards down the field to beat the coverage, and he just does it. He has like a pitch for every scenario. It's why he's so fun to watch.
And it was a nice job by Landry pulling the ball, and there was a 15% catch probability on that throw, and he stuck it in there.
Do you believe that?
I don't. Yeah, that's one where
could be 7%, could be 39%.
I believe the number.
Right,
the number is exactly
that
right.
I love the next gen stats, but the percent of chance that you had to complete the throw when you threw it. I feel like it's one of those scientific advancements that it's like 10 years from now it will be a lot more fine tuned.
Well, also
that's
that,
it.
Yeah.
You know
does
what
that
I mean?
Factor like what if
it's like they used to treat crazy people by like electroshock therapy. Now that's not really thought of as a good idea. You make scientific.
You guys are going off a hunch though, which might be right. They do have data. They're not just pulling this.
No,
data.
It's like I know. It's like in baseball analytics in the 1970s, the forerunners came out with defensive stats that 15 years later, everyone said, "Hey, nice try," but these
it's
things
too
mean
precise.
Nothing.
It's too precise for something that's inherently.
Can't next, you say that about anything?
Does next gen stats factor in? What if a bird were to fly into Jarvis Landry's helmet while
see?
The ball
it would
ball
go down.
But is that factored into the 15%?
Yes.
There's all sorts of things that could happen.
I've talked
the
to the people. I actually asked the bird question.
I don't know.
They said absolutely.
Good for them. That's very thorough if they've packed that in there.
And it would lower it. Actually, do you want to hear it?
I do. I mean,
if the bird flew into Jarvis Landry's face mask, it would subtract 15% from his catch probability, leaving 0%.
Well, that checks out.
This the math works.
This limb of the company is at a different level than we are. So,
other thoughts?
I'm a little worried about Von Miller and Bradley Chubb against Greg Robinson.
Oh, I thought you were worried about the Broncos.
No, I'm not. I mean, the Greg Robinson, the fact that they're relying so much and like, ooh, Greg Robinson's kind of shored up that left tackle spot. It's like, yeah, that can last for about 2 or 3 weeks, and that ended last week where he did not play well at all. And just the idea of Greg Robinson going up against those two guys, they do catch a break. Shaq Barrett being out has definitely hurt them. But that would be the recipe, I think, for the Broncos to win is to force some mistakes with quick pressure.
Well, there may be a lot of quick passes and screens, and I think that the one thing that Mayfield has done a good job of, and when there has been pressure, he's not forcing the ball to what would be his first read. He has an ability to sort of see the whole field, and he had some great dump-offs to Nick Chubb and maybe Bradley Chubb. They are cousins. I want to see them.
Nick Chubb's a star,
by the way.
Lied
at some part.
They're
both stars.
Trade jerseys.
Well, the Chubbs are stars.
Seems likely.
How fun would that be?
What you're forgetting, Greg, is that the Broncos are going to be without their Pro Bowl cornerback, Chris Harris, for this game.
This is the first game he's missing, right?
I mean, people don't really factor in the Chris Harris.
Are you gonna guard Prashad Perriman without Chris Harris? Not gonna happen.
Well, you put Chris Harris on him.
He's out.
I mean, the good thing is this joke, assuming the Broncos don't make the playoffs, has a shelf life of about 2 more episodes of this, and that's
you
when the Broncos will be done.
I think it expired like.
I mean,
Wednesday.
I think we'll keep going. We'll keep going back to the well.
It's definitely a little stale. It's one of those you like look. It's a couple past days due. Right. You're just like it's crunchy.
But you know what happens?
We'll keep going back.
When it starts to get Mark a little angry, that pumps a lot of life into.
Yeah.
It, you know. So all of a sudden, it's a wild card.
Not angry yet.
Get excited, though, Mark. This is fun.
I am excited for this for the same reasons you are. I can't remember the last time that I had a day off from work watching them play primetime other than week 3 when they knocked the Jets essentially out of contention in September.
That seemed unnecessary.
I don't know. I was trying
I should
to
lock up the Broncos for that unnecessary
Well, I was
day.
Trying to finish the sentence because I realized my fact was wrong in the middle of what I said, so I apologize.
I was thinking about locking up the Browns, but I think that's the one thing they're not ready to do yet, go win big games on the road.
It's not just Denzel Ward. Philip Gaines is out, and Terrence Mitchell, and it's not that the Broncos have a lot through the air, but they are a little banged up.
I think the Browns are a little better team, though.
Let's move to Sunday's games now, and I'm assuming Mark and I will be in the office for these. We'll see how it all plays out. But the Cardinals, 3-10, who cares? Lost 17-3 to the Lions last week. And I don't know if you guys fired this one up on the Game Pass, but it was not the most exciting football game to lay your eyes on. And now they travel to Atlanta to face the Falcons. The Falcons lose every week. They stink. Then they haven't.
They were 4-4 once, weren't they?
Who the birds?
Yeah,
the Falcons were
the new rat
yeah,
birds.
They were 4-4.
Remember that?
Now they're 4-9.
Yep.
And they will attempt to do something that they haven't done since the first Sunday of November, Greg, which is score more than 20 points.
Oof. Well, you got to worry if you're the Cardinals, because coming into Atlanta in the Georgia Dome at this time of year. I mean, that's like a few extra touchdowns.
Not the Georgia
the way
Dome,
the crowd.
Point taken.
Just the crowd.
Georgia Dome.
This is the deadest crowd in the league, even when the games matter. And I can't imagine how dead it's going to be for Cardinals-Falcons. It's going to be terrible.
Well, they had a solution in the past for quiet crowds. Do you remember what that was?
Oh, yeah.
Pump it in.
didn't work so well for them.
No.
Send Eugene Robinson out on the town.
Well, that was a previous solution.
By the way, Deion Jones has been back, and their defense is still bad. I do think Dan Quinn's been given too much of a pass for coaching the last-ranked defense in the league, according to Football Outsiders.
I used to get mad, really mad, in fact, and probably it was still a mistake, but the Jets hired Todd Bowles essentially over Dan Quinn because they didn't want to wait out the Super Bowl.
Quinn was in Seattle. That whole theory makes no sense.
Never made sense, and I was killing my – I was so mad after the first two or three years, but now, I don't know, is Quinn really
– He's solid.
That hot? I know he's probably better than Bowles, but it's not like we missed out on a once-in-a-generation coaching talent.
I agree.
Any other thoughts on this game?
I would say that
– Save time for the game that matter.
It was embarrassing to watch that Falcons-Packers game and see Atlanta down 34-7 based off sloppy offense. And, you know, this was a group of players that were high quality earlier in the year, and they've fallen apart entirely.
And, Wes, I know you kind of think Steve Sarkisian doesn't deserve to be roasted, but they probably need to finish strong here, or they have to improve on what they've done for the past 5 weeks for him to be safe.
My stance on Steve Sarkisian is he should not be blamed because the Falcons lost both starting guards and their starting running back, and they have a one-dimensional offense. I don't think he's one of the brightest offensive minds in the league. I just think like he would be a fall guy if he gets fired.
Let's move on. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 5-8. Whatever was left of their playoff chances kind of went out the window, and they could not upset the Saints. Although it was
You're trying to tell me the Giants are alive at 5-8. Why not the Bucs?
Well, they're technically alive, but whatever like real chances they had.
The Giants are alive in a whole different
way. Giants are alive and well, and you know it.
Well,
and it's your worst
I'm just
nightmare.
Saying they're both dead.
They both have less than 1% chance to make the playoffs.
Well, that's better than zero.
The Bucs travel to Baltimore to face the Ravens, who saw their three-game winning streak snapped, Mark, by the Chiefs, but it was oh so close. Do you think they get back to their winning ways here? It seems like they might.
The Ravens?
Yeah.
I do.
You gotta give them a chance here.
I'm in trouble with the Ravens because watching them, because I didn't really get a chance to watch that closely on Sunday, it kind of hit me that this team is playing – I know everyone likes these 45-42 games. That's great. Have a nice time with it. And if you don't, then you're an awful person. Like, you're not with it. But I find what the Ravens have been doing, like, almost highly erotic. I love these, like,
delightful.
These insane 7-10 play drives where all they do is run the ball over and over and over. And they essentially take the opponent's defense and pound them into salt. I think that Lamar Jackson feels like he's a rock dropped off a building when he's running. He's suddenly 12, 15 yards upfield. I can't help. I love watching these guys, and I love watching them so much, and I'm so sure they're going to knock out this ugly uniform Bucs team that I'm this time for real locking it up.
Oh, this is available.
Oh, Hess, yeah. I'll do anything I want.
I mean,
yes.
Yes.
It wouldn't be by, you know, the, you know, the touchdown – thing, but
there's been a lot of nonsense going on lately. This is my nonsense.
What can you specifically
people picking the Patriots at home, the Texans at home,
right? But all of those, for what it's worth, they were even lower favorites.
I simply don't care.
They're nine. I mean,
I like them. That's
I think
why
you
I
definitely care.
I'm with you.
I like them.
I'm with you though that the Ravens are kind of erotic. Did you hear some of the sounds coming from my corner when I was watching that?
You
Ravens
were into
Chiefs
it.
Game. It was like the game of the year.
You've been working hard to make the Ravens happen. I feel like you've been pushing Lamar Jackson very hard.
Yeah, and
but
it is happening.
Can I just throw – I don't want to throw cold water on Lamar Jackson at all, but I just want to say that in his four starts, he's already been hurt in two of these starts now.
That's a concern.
He's running the ball constantly
security.
At like a historically high rate, and he's already showing signs that maybe his body doesn't have the durability to take on these massive speed bodies of the NFL.
That's why you get a veteran backup like Joe Flacco.
But you have one more game. you got one. That's nice. You get one more cupcake here. And, Mark, congratulations on the win you're going to get here because this is a cupcake.
I'm not going to even listen to this. You guys have had some of the most outrageous at-home locks that we've seen all year. I don't care what anyone thinks.
But thank
you, dude.
Next week at Chargers and then the Browns, who are frisky on defense. Real tests are coming after this.
Look, the Bucs D has played better. They held the – Saints under 300 yards. They've forced a ton of turnovers over the last month. Their defensive line's playing pretty well. Jameis Winston hasn't been perfect, but he's made some pretty nice plays. The threat of him running's been okay. I'm just more worried about like the Bucs offensive line against that Ravens front. The Ravens are playing better defense. They have such a nice team defense. They can handle so many different schemes and so many different plays because they have a veteran secondary that it's just hard to see the Bucs scoring like more than 20 points the way that especially the right side of their offensive line is playing and just getting Winston killed.
It's worth noting this is a road game for the Bucs.
Yep, and they're terrible on the road.
And they give up 40 points a game on the road and 20 points a game at home.
That's a problem.
That is one of the most drastic differences you will ever see.
They need to play in the shadow of that pirate ship.
They need
to blind the other team.
They are a different team, though, since they changed defensive coordinators. They're okay. They've been okay.
Well, since they got their best two players back, too.
That's probably big.
Hey, let's talk a stinker just for you, Wes. You drew the short straw here. I signed these games just kind of in order of the way you guys sit. It's not scientific. And the way it worked out is you will be entering us into the conversation on the 5-8 Lions against the 4-9 Bills.
I mean, I appreciate you. I appreciate that preamble, but you don't have to feel bad about it.
Okay, good.
I think the only thing worth watching in this game is Josh Allen, who's doing things with his legs that Michael Vick and Randall Cunningham never even did. The highest three-game total, back-to-back-to-back, rushing yards for a quarterback. That's phenomenal. And I know Mark has some strong feelings on this after watching Josh Allen, too.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm every day after school from, like, fourth through seventh grade – this one kid up the street, Rob McCarthy, would call me, and he's like, "You're getting up here to play football at the field up the street." He's like, "I have a doctor." So it was every day.
Sounds like a
censored.
He was awesome, but he was like, It was like sometimes I was like, I just want to lie on my couch and watch like a rerun of Charlie's Angels. But he was like, "No, you're getting up here." But when you go up there, they'd always be like,
"How old are you?"
Huh?
Charlie's Angels.
This is like ages ago, fifth grade.
But Charlie's Angels.
He reminds me of.
It was.
Josh Allen is always
actually 49.
No, I'm 45. There was always this one kid in these games that, like, there'd be a bunch of 3'8" kids that weighed like 86 pounds, and then they'd invite someone's older brother, and he'd just run through them as like a 6'3" guy who was like the only kid that had been lifting weights in eighth grade, and like, why is he on the field with us?
And you're usually playing on blacktop.
Right?
On,
why
like,
am
a side
I here?
Street,
that's so what Josh Allen reminds me when he's running through these guys.
I want to know what he does with his legs that those other people can't. Like, just. I want to hear it described.
Goes over 100 yards per game.
Okay.
Can he throw the football? Can he throw the ball down?
He can throw it with velocity. Can he throw it accurately? That's a whole different
thing. He is far from, like Lamar Jackson, but even further behind, I would say. He's far from being ready to be kind of an NFL passer. I don't know if he's ever going to quite be that, but can you come up with an offense that can work with him? I mean, time will tell. He's been fun to watch.
I think all these rookie quarterbacks on bad teams, you give him a little bit of a pass. His metrics as a passer are dreadful, but it's not necessarily all on him.
But come back to us, Lions. Bruce Ellington's out this week, which is actually a big loss for them, which is amazing. Their second and third receivers are Aaron Jones, but not the guy in the Packers, and Brandon Powell.
It's Aaron Jones, isn't it?
It's Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
The same, and then Zach Zenner.
What happened to TJ Jones?
I don't know. They don't
Did you
like
see
him.
Zach Attack like take over an entire drive last week?
Andy Jones. My bad.
Did you see Zach Zenner take over the game last week, though?
Zenner's getting some run.
I mean, someone would have told you about 4 years ago that Zenner had some wheels.
Mark's still mad that we
Who was the type? Didn't you like David Cobb, too?
And Toby Gerhart.
I liked him.
You're a big
theory.
Toby Gerhart guy.
I did a making the leap
Peyton
on Toby
Hillis.
Gerhart.
There seems to be some
Toby
similarity
Gerhart.
Between all these
Toby runners. Gerhart on the Jags was a making the leap ultra failure.
I feel like I'm surprised you're not bigger on Christian McCaffrey based on the pattern
good.
Here.
He's too good.
I don't know. Kind of just he bores me.
But Zach Zenner,
for those,
really
I'm just saying, he pops up once every 19 or 20 months, and I'll mention.
If
that
you're new to the podcast, I believe he was the preseason rushing champion in 2015, and Mark, he told a couple sea poems about him.
Absolutely, they were dead on. They were prophecies, not sea poems.
The Green Bay Packers, 5-7-1. We know what they got to do here. They're gonna have to win out and get some help to make the playoffs, and. Here is their biggest test, because if they could get by, Greg, the Bears on the road, it's going to be whether Mark, you and other people that are sick of the Packers and don't think they should be talked about so much. There's going to be a ton of talk about this Green Bay team as being the team to watch to steal that playoff spot if they could get by the Bears. But can they get by the Bears? Are the Bears just too good, especially in their building?
I think they are. I mean, this is a game that the Bears, I think, have to be focused on getting Mitchell Trubisky back on track. He hasn't played a good game in about 5 weeks. You know, he had that game against Minnesota. Then he was out for 2 weeks. Injured last week was probably I would say his worst game of the season in tough conditions. The matchup is fine, though. I mean, we didn't even mention when Mike Daniels went on injured reserve. Kenny Clark missed practice. You know, this is not a great Packers defense, and there's not a lot of reason for me to think that the Packers are suddenly going to play their best game of the season. I think that's what it would take to beat the Bears.
Packers have 6 starters on IR from their defense.
Right.
They just don't have much left.
I could totally see Rodgers being smothered in this game. His receivers unable to get separation. Khalil Mack and the pass rush of the Bears coming down on him. And he's not throwing interceptions because he doesn't throw interceptions. He just set the record, in fact, for not throwing interceptions. But a lot of firing the ball into the dirt or sailing it 10 yards out of bounds and scrambling for his life and muttering to himself as he walks off the field. This, to me, does not set up well for Rodgers at all, as much as I'd love for him to stay in the mix.
What a matchup, though. You guys, Dan and Mark, we taped this thing for Game Pass, so if you're international.
No, it's just regular Game Pass.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so everyone can go. Go check out our playoff
Days of Christmas
projection on
promotion.
Game Pass. Right. And you guys put the Packers into the playoffs, so you guys must think
I actually put the Giants.
Game.
Mark put the Giants in.
I put the Packers.
Somebody put the Packers in.
I did. But I did that in about 4 seconds and never thought twice about it.
The one thing I love about
But they got
to
win this game. You're right. So I do believe in the Packers. Changed my mind.
When we were in London in week one, this was the game that, you know, we were stunned as we were leaving Sky Sports to find out that the Bears and Khalil Mack were dominating the game. And by the time we went to bed at our hotel, like, they – had Green Bay authored one of the great comebacks, and that game ended with Mitch Trubisky unable to find a way to seal the deal for the Bears. I think Mitch Trubisky has to do something in this game too. It can't just
be not a walkover.
Not at all. But the Packers' offense last week looked as good as it has in a long while. It's the first time they scored over. That's the highest points they had all year. 34.
It's kind of a no lose situation, right, Wes? It's either the Packers win and they're in the hunt, or the team of ATL is surging and riding high entering the last 2 weeks of the season.
That's exactly how I view it. The Bears, they do need to get big game out of Trubisky, but one positive sign from last week is they finally got their running game going, and I've been waiting for that to happen. Not just like wheel routes to Tariq Cohen or a couple screen passes here and there or a draw play to him, but an actual Jordan Howard-led chain-moving attack, and they finally did that last week.
I think they'll be able to this week, and this is a week where Aaron Rodgers get picked off because he's going against the Bears. They have 25 interceptions. Aaron Rodgers only has one interception this year. For a guy who's been talked about as a down year, he has his highest yards
per
attempt.
Well, Dan pointed out a good reason why he only has one interception.
What?
He likes to throw the ball in the dirt or out of bounds. Sure,
at a historical level.
But he also has a higher yards per attempt than he has since his MVP season. So it's not like he's been
– and a lower completion rate than he's had in many years.
As insane as it sounds, there is a faction of Packers fans – that are extremely frustrated with Rodgers, and for those reasons, quitting on plays and deciding to get out of a play and get rid of the ball is one of the reasons that people have frustration.
He can't quit on too many plays in this game because he's going to have to put up points, and I don't think he's going to do it, and that's why I'm locking up the team of ATL a week after we all picked against them. So sorry, Bears.
Yeah, that was good makeup. I like that. All right. The Raiders, they're 3-10. Where are the Raiders now? Where are they even playing? This is a crazy story. The Raiders are having the city of Oakland is suing the team. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, yes, essentially.
And now the Raiders may look to exit their lease at Oakland Alameda Stadium, and Vegas isn't ready yet, I guess, and it's just a ton of drama around this team. Derek Carr said that, like, it's crazy that we don't know where we're going to be playing next year. So it's just another S sandwich for this franchise and what's been a terrible season, frankly.
It's insane. Roger Goodell was asked about it at an owners meeting on Wednesday, and he said, yeah, you know, we're going to need to know by January or February where they're playing next year, you know, for scheduling purposes. I was like, yeah, that seems like it'd be nice to find out where this team's playing.
I mean, they'll get it figured out, but it's just it is mid-December.
It's not going to be in Vegas, I don't think. They'll probably find another – if they can't play in Oakland, what a depressing way for a great franchise to end in Oakland. Maybe they'll play in the 49ers stadium. That's been floating.
It's always a bad idea to say we're moving, you know, X amount of years from now. If you're going to move, do it quick, because how is it going to end well?
Greg, they're playing the Bengals this week in Cincinnati. It's the final home game for the Bengals this season. Is it Marvin Lewis, once and for all, is this Marvin Lewis's final game?
I think it is.
As head coach in Cincinnati?
I think it is. And maybe not his last with the organization. I wouldn't put it past Paul Brown, like, moving him upstairs.
This is not a criticism of you in particular.
We could say this for 5 years.
How many times do you think on this podcast you've said this is Marvin Lewis's last game?
Three.
Five straight years.
Two or three years. They're last in yards per points per drive allowed, too. With this defensive roster, it doesn't make sense. I know they've had some injuries, but when I looked at their defense last week, which I probably played their best game of the year last week, it's like...
If that was the best game, there were moments over and over on Game Pass.
I'm saying on their defense. They held the Chargers to fewer yards than the Chargers have had all season, and they looked respectable.
They had much better games early in the season.
Defensively?
Yeah.
I don't know.
There were also
a couple drives over and over
where Bruce Arians was like, that's just too easy, when the Bengals were getting run over by the Chargers.
I do have a scouting report, though, on Jeff Driscoll after last week's game. He's all right.
I do not see a whole lot of difference between him and Andy Dalton.
Yeah, Jeff Driscoll.
We should have to pay for that information.
It's all right.
The Dallas Cowboys, 8-5. Wow, they went from 3-5 to 8-5 in 5 weeks. That's pretty good. And now they travel to Lucas Oil Stadium to face the Colts. Wes, 1 week ago today, we did this podcast, and you were really hurt about the performance of the Colts in that 6-0 shutout loss to the Jaguars. You essentially deplaned the Colts team bandwagon that flies, I suppose. But after they go to Houston and get that 24-21 win, you're all the way back, because I've heard you all week, and you're back in on the Colts, aren't you?
No, I wouldn't say that.
You're back, baby!
This matchup scares me in the same way the Jaguars matchup scared me. Because there's no doubt the Cowboys' defensive front can get pressure on Andrew Luck, especially with one of the guards for the Colts, Mark Lewinsky, isn't practicing this week and might not play. They haven't protected Luck the last few weeks as well as they did at midseason when they were in the middle of that sack streak. The question I have is the Cowboys' secondary is not as talented as the Jaguars, and the Jaguars put the clamps on these Colts wide receivers and tight ends with the exception of T.Y. Hilton. I just don't think their receivers and tight ends are talented beyond him.
Hmm. But they find a way to get him open anyways, at least against most teams.
Not against the Jaguars.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is a tough matchup, but Luck has been so good, I think.
And Hilton, too.
When the defense calls the right play. Like, I don't know, Mahomes you would have to put right there. But there have been some plays, and I can think of a few from last week's game, where the Texans and Romeo Crennel kind of dialed up the perfect blitz or the perfect play or had the screen broken up, and Luck just has an innate patience to kind of wait it out, to kind of buy that extra time or kind of wait for the cornerbacks to get out of the throwing window and still make a play and beat the perfect defense. It's so impressive.
I thought he made last week against the Texans some of the prettiest throws he's made all year. To guys 20 yards downfield on the run at the sideline, I think they have an absolute shot to win this game.
Oh, no, I'm not saying they don't have a shot. I think
they're the favorites.
They're at home, and I do think if I had to gun to my head, I would put the Colts over the Cowboys in this game. I just think that the Cowboys' defense is for real.
They are. I'd like to see a complete game out of Dak Prescott. He does some really positive things each week and does some really negative things each week. You know how you always say, like, when there's a lot of plays in a game that, like, oh, they're going to be tired the next week, the defense. Do offenses get tired, or is it just defenses?
Well, one is taking it to the other.
The Cowboys
right?
had 99 snaps last week. That's like two games. That's more than double what the Dolphins had, for instance, in snap. That's a lot of snaps. And they have two. They are not the same line that they used to be. Zeke is working harder. Dak is getting pressured more. They basically have two offensive line spots that are liabilities, and that hasn't been the case in previous years. I like this Colts defense. This is Eberflus's revenge. Matt Eberflus, for years under Rod Marinelli, little pupil teaches the mentor, Eberflus.
Colts defense is, I think they have improved throughout the year, and I think a lot of people are sleeping on them.
That's what
pupil
I'm saying.
Teaches the mentor.
I mean, they're flying around. Kenny Moore, Autry, Sheard, like I like Anthony Walker, and I do apologize for all the Darius Leonard, you know, fans out there. I probably was short-sighted, not including him in the Defensive Rookie of the Year. So sorry, Wes.
No, that's leading the league in tackles.
And all those Colts fans.
Not only leading the league in tackles.
You're right.
But has more tackles per game than any rookies this century, including Patrick Willis and Luke Kuechly.
Do you think it would be him and not Van Der Esch would be being talked up as DPOY in the rookie class if he was not a member of the Cowboys?
If Darius Leonard played for the Cowboys, they'd have a statue of him already.
That's what I mean.
They'd bypass Rookie of the Year and name him MVP.
That's a nice little matchup then, Van Der Esch versus Leonard here. I would still give it to Derwin James, but I do admit Leonard, since he's played the whole season, should be right.
He also has 7 sacks for an off-ball linebacker and 4 forced fumbles. I don't know what more you could ask this guy to do.
And what else can you ask, guys, from Cavo? Transition into an ad read.
That was well done.
Control Center by Cavo is the one remote that does it all. This holiday season, help your loved ones take control of their TV with the gift of Control Center. Control Center cleans up your home theater so you can control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use remote and stop wasting precious time searching for shows. Greg, I know you are a real couch potato, and you like to get on there and watch your television shows and do your binging. And sometimes when there's just too many remotes and it's all complicated, you don't have the same level of excitement.
It makes me feel like an old man, which remote to use.
New world problems.
Well, how about you relax this holiday season and enjoy stress-free TV with Control Center. Shop now and get 40% off Control Center with promo code AROUND. That's $59.95, 40% off regular pricing of $99.95. Nice deal. Control Center is available at CAAVO.com and Best Buy. Control Center by Cavo, one remote that does it all. Let's move to Jacksonville, where the Jaguars continued their deeply disappointing 2018 season with an embarrassing 30-9 loss in Nashville on Thursday Night Football. So they get half a bye week to prepare for a Redskins team and a total free fall. Greg, Mark Sanchez gets benched last week. I don't even know if anybody's covering this team anymore, so I don't know if Josh Johnson is officially the week 15 starter. Yes. Okay, he is. But it's probably not going to matter, right? Because if the Redskins, if you had to make a list of the most helpless teams in the NFL right now, the Redskins have to be near the top of the list.
Yeah, I mean, if you're apologizing to Wes for giving that Lions-Bills game, I got this one and Cardinals-Falcons. I mean, this is a December football game if I've ever seen one. One where you almost expect the Jaguars, who are awful, with Cody Kessler to win going away, or else you'd be disappointed. That's how bad the Redskins are right now.
The Redskins are playing preseason football. They're dropping passes. They're committing penalties. Adrian Peterson's a non-factor because they can't give him a running start, and the defense is just gluing onto him on every play.
Did you see that crazy stat? Not this week, but the week before, he had the 90-yard touchdown. Of course. He finished with 98 yards.
Right, yeah.
He didn't get 100 yards rushing, and he had a 90-yard rush in the game.
It reminds me of what happened behind that Cardinals offensive line last year on their third-string quarterback. There's just nowhere for him to run.
I mean, if I ran 90 yards and scored, I might be like, I'm good. Like, you guys, now how about the rest of this offense?
Matty McCarthy from down the block think about that?
Well, he wouldn't like that.
By the way, not just making excuses for Adrian Peterson. He had Jackrabbit Jenkins one-on-one in the hole last week and couldn't make him miss.
Are you a little worried that Frank Gore is ultimately having a better season than Peterson?
Frank Gore is having a good season.
He's not having a better season than Peterson.
I mean, the yards per carry, like the yards per play.
I mean, I like the factor in how they're being used. And one is a workhorse and the other one is like a role player.
Just saying, Gore's getting it done.
Is he allergic to the end zone?
Does anybody else – take this guy's offline, guys. Does anybody else watching that game last Thursday night and seeing the luxury box cutaways to Tom Coughlin, does anybody else have a hunch that this guy could end up being the head coach in a month?
Yes, yes.
I think that was always potentially the scapegoat type plan. Like, I'm going to get someone in here.
Not
they're
even scapegoat,
fail.
Though.
Well, I think he always wanted to be a coach again, and no one would take him. So you do it this way. You get in the upper echelons of the organization. Then you say, listen, guys, we've come to the conclusion that I need to be the coach here.
Especially when Troy Aikman is like – You know, it's been really tough for Coughlin not coaching this team. It's really driving him up the wall. But, you know, he likes being with the Jaguars.
Because that's what means what he was telling Aikman two days ago during meetings.
There was something about – and I don't know the day-to-day, like, how other men in his possession in the league operate during a game. But there was something about his little notebook that he was, like, scribbling after every play notes. And I was like, oh, this dude is all the way in. And he looks like a guy that's ready to get on the sideline. And yes, he's old. I think he's 72, but like our president, I think is 71. 72
and he's functioning
isn't
without any issues.
Right? So. Maybe that's a bad excuse, but but just the fact that 72 isn't what it used to be, and this guy keeps himself in shape. I don't think he's your typical 72-year-old.
It's hard to get that coaching out of your system. He's one of those guys who's a natural. He's been doing it for what 40 years or 50 years.
He's also not a it doesn't look young for his age the same way that Pete Carroll does, but he's still young in terms of his energy. I could see him doing it for another 3 years.
Let's move on. The Miami Dolphins. Oh, what excitement around the Dolphins right now, because despite being really a middling team ultimately, not a ton of talent on this roster, and some people like Adam Gase, but some people are like, eh, this is not quite working out on the sidelines. And their recent history, and by recent history, I mean everything post Dan Marino's career, and really everything post Dan Marino's
Achilles
tear.
What did the Dolphins fans do to you this week?
no, I'm just joking. In fact, I want to give the Dolphins
Lock
props.
It up.
That the 7-6 Miami Dolphins are doing a nice job this season. The fact that they are 7-6 with Brock Osweiler starting a handful of games, and I just got to say, you got to give them a little bit of credit hanging around.
I can't believe it.
And things change in the NFL so quickly. I mean, they should not have won the game against the Patriots. I think we all agree on that. And, you know, the game against the Bills, Josh Allen left a wide-open guy in the end zone at the end of that game, so they probably should have lost the last two games, but they didn't, Mark Sessler. And that's why I'm going to say it's your turn to talk about this game, Dolphins at Vikings.
Well, I think you've done a nice job. I have been down on the Dolphins for half a decade, but – last game, at least, they broke out of hyper-boring mode for me. And I'm not going to kill Ryan Tannehill when he made some of the better throws he's made all season last week. And I loved seeing, against the Patriots, Brandon Bolden burst up the middle and blow for a touchdown against his former employer and then do it again. And I the only thing that annoys me about the Dolphins is the fact that I have to hear Ryan Tannehill screaming Omaha. Barry, put that away. Like, that needed to go with Peyton Manning. That really annoys me that anyone else is still doing that.
Ouch.
But beyond that, I want to see how they respond to what was the greatest, one of the great moments, not just of this entire season, but one of the great sports moments in ages and ages, and how the Vikings respond to yet another drubbing by a real playoff team going up to Seattle and get whipped. Is there anything left in this Vikings team? Probably at home there is, but I see this as it. We've been talking about all week, 50-50 game, and I have no problem with the Dolphins winning this and taking the Vikings and putting them out of their misery. Bye-bye.
The desert people do not think this is a close game. The desert people feel like the Vikings have this one in hand, which surprised me because I don't know. Maybe it goes back to what you've been saying, Wes, because you've been defending Kirk Cousins. Maybe in this environment, at home, an early game, not a lot of pressure in this situation. Maybe he lights up the Dolphins. Maybe these are the games that people aren't seeing with Kirk Cousins.
Well, it's just a guess, but I'm guessing the desert people like the Vikings because they're a much better team than the Dolphins.
Are they, though?
Are they that much better?
I mean, when's the last time the Dolphins won without, like, a fluke or with a bunch of flukes?
I get it,
or
but they're two mediocre teams. Here's the thing. They've been able to repeat those flukes. And one of our podcast listeners, I was trying to figure, like, how is this team 7-6? And someone responded with a couple answers. And I think if you add to his answer, you got an answer. They lead the league in explosive passing touchdowns over 20 yards, which doesn't make any sense because they're not really even close to the lead in just normal plays over 20 yards. But they have a ton of explosive touchdowns. They're second in the league in interceptions, four more than number three. They're only behind Chicago. Special teams has been great. And for some reason, Adam Gase is like a wizard in close games, and that shouldn't be able to repeat, but he's done it for three seasons now. He's 20-6 in one-score games. So I don't know. They've somehow added all that up, and they're mediocre.
And the Vikings have not beaten a team with a winning record. I mean, I think the Vikings have all this potential.
I just think the Vikings are bad is my answer.
I agree.
Wes, that they fully deserve.
It's okay
six,
if we disagree.
One. You know, I know. I mean,
but how about this? Can we say Minnesota, go beat a team worth something? It's like week after week.
Are you going to be really impressed if they beat the Dolphins?
No, not at all. But I also would be a little bit more impressed if they did anything against the Bears, the Patriots, the Seahawks, the Saints. the Rams or even the Bills.
Part of the reason
they played the Rams really tough.
Part of the reasons the Dolphins are so big underdogs is they've won one game on the road, and that was week two against the Jets, and they've been blown out on the road quite a bit. So it is tough, but Kirk Cousins' bad games have been are so bad. Like, that's the difference, I think, between him and a top 8 or 9 quarterback, is sometimes early in the game you can tell it's not going to be his type of week. I am curious what they're going to do in terms of changing the offense, because this is a good matchup. This is not a good Dolphins defense.
By the way, watch out. If the Dolphins do, and the Vikings have issues, and they just fired their offensive coordinator, and they're having a disappointing season, the wheels could fall off, hypothetically. I don't think they will, but if they did and the Dolphins got to 8-6, they're home Jacksonville at Buffalo to close the season. They could be playing in January, which would be not a lot of fun. But, again, that would be
incredible.
There
are some wheels falling off signs here between the coordinator firing with 3 weeks left. Mike Zimmer's daughter went nuts,
How is that a sign?
On Twitter. Oh, that is definitely a sign.
Wait,
how
about,
is it a
in
sign
what
that
way? What does
the
that
coach's
mean?
Coach's daughter had some comments on Instagram.
What did
how
she
is
say?
That the team falling apart?
Let's see
went,
what she said.
She went after the fans for being idiotic. And
by the way, it was I read what she wrote, and
fair.
It was great.
It was all fair. What I'm saying is actually that is a telltale sign of a team that's falling apart, is that when the daughter gets on social media and is defending the coach, usually it's a kiss of death. It's like getting a vote of confidence. You're out the door soon.
I'm with you.
I have no idea what that has to do with the 53 players on the roster, but
let's move on. The Tennessee Titans, after humbling defeats at the hands of the Colts and Texans, both on the road, they squeeze by the Jets at home and then embarrass the Jaguars. And we didn't talk about that game as a group because it was the Thursday night game. But I'll hand out a lollipop in that game to all you Titans fans, because you didn't just take care of business
we
last Thursday
get this
night.
Sponsored, the yeah. Lollipop
by Glow Pop Charms. You didn't just take care of business. You basically castrated a team in your own division. And made them feel less about themselves, perhaps forever. So I respect that you were able to do that to the Jaguars. So there you go.
No coming back from castration.
No, not in some ways, no, there isn't. So here they are, 7-6, and now they travel to the Meadowlands to face one of the hottest teams in the NFL. I mean, you can't say it's not true, Wes, because they've won 4 or 5, and not a lot of teams can claim that right now. The G-Men, your thoughts?
Oh, you want me to – my thoughts on the Giants? They're obviously a much better team now than they were early in the season. I think you have to put it in the context of their opponents. And this week they play a tougher opponent. I'll be impressed if they win this game.
Really?
The Titans have – they have sent 2 more players to IR, Jonnu Smith and Jack Conklin, their tight end and right tackle. I think you're going to see a lot of Anthony Firkser, who is like Cameron Brate, an undrafted tight end out of Harvard.
Harvard!
And I think you're going to see him featured a little bit.
Wes has got – I think he's giving a fantasy nugget out right now.
I'm not allowed – Evan Silva told me I'm not allowed to dispense fantasy.
Every
fantasy.
Single target.
What?
Why not?
Because I'm so far removed from the business. I don't even, like –
You are. You couldn't
fantasy.
Be more imbued in the business of knowing
Maybe
what
that
teams
gives you
are doing
a different,
stuff,
unique perspective.
I like, when August rolls around and we do our fantasy what do we call it? Extravaganza.
Spectacular. Extravaganza.
Yeah. I'll offer my, go get George Kittle advice.
Does that make Evan uncomfortable when you do that once a year on our podcast?
I think he's just joking with me a little bit. But
I don't think so.
But I agree that I'm not qualified.
I think the big fish has got a big problem.
No, I'm not qualified. I don't think in fantasy terms.
Mariota's thrown 16 passes to Anthony Firkser this year. Guess how many catches he has?
Zero.
15. 12.
16. He's got
– Censored.
Perfect.
Wow! I was all set, by the way, to lock up the G-Men here just because it was fun.
I think you should.
This is definitely your one. This is definitely the game you're watching at 10 a.m., I feel like.
The problem, though, and I will be watching it closely because if for no other reason than to drive Wes crazy, I want the Giants to keep winning. But I do.
It won't drive me crazy, believe me.
I have to say that it doesn't sound like Odell Beckham is going to play. This quad injury, he got it reevaluated on Thursday because it's not healing the way he expected to. He said, quote, S ain't right. So I would be surprised if he plays, and if he does make it on the field, is he going to be the same guy? So that hurts. I know they were able to dominate the Redskins last week without him, but that was a bad Redskins team in free fall.
Corey Coleman made a couple plays.
He did. And you know, you got all the Shepherds making plays and Saquon Barkley's playing out of his mind. But I can't lock the Giants up. I think they'll win. I have to say, I think they're going to win still.
I think you should lock it up.
I think I would maybe take the Giants too. To me, these are two even teams. I mean, neither
even
one.
Even without Odell.
You should both lock
you
up the Giants.
You must really not like the Titans then.
I just think they're both average teams.
I mean, Dan, do you trust the Titans to have two inspired performances in a row?
No, I don't. That's why I think they're the Titans. But I think it's kind of a coin flip game, so those are not the games.
Neither one really has a reliable passing game. The Titans' defense is better, but it's not that much better.
Than the Giants?
It's not great. You're right. The Giants
much better than the Giants.
The Giants' secondary, a good passing game, picks apart. You know,
the Titans are not a good
passing. The Titans are not that team. So you know, I think it'll be tight.
Remember, Dan, when Romo talked about Sam Darnold's spatial awareness being special?
I do.
I think that's what Marcus Mariota is missing. He waits until the pressure is in his face before he tries to avoid it.
He doesn't feel it.
I think things close quicker than he expects.
All right, so that'll be a fun game to keep an eye on Sunday. Let's move on to the Seattle Seahawks, who have put it all together. Whoa! Good thing I did my mea culpa about 5 weeks ago because I wrote off the Seattle after their 0-2 start. We did a show where I was like, actually, no. I'm out on that.
I think 90% of football fans did.
Yeah, yeah. And since then, they've gotten even better. They've now went to the next level where they are a legitimate NFC player. Even when we had that discussion last month, we were all kind of on the same page. I thought that, yes, this is going to be a frisky team. Maybe not a playoff team, but they're going to be fighting all the way to the end of the season. Now they're 8-5. And now they're going to San Francisco to face one of the worst teams in football, Greg Rosenthal. Wow, this is setting up well for the Seahawks.
It is. I mean, they shouldn't be allowed to play. Didn't they just? They just played 2 weeks ago. This is ridiculous. I hate that.
There's a lot of this.
I hate the two and three weeks. I guess it's just impossible to avoid. There's no reason.
Why do you hate it so much?
It seems very possible to avoid if they really want it.
Because I think football is It's such a game plan sport, and you should spread it out. Just playing each other. It just feels unfair somehow. I think maybe it makes it harder for the Seahawks to go dominate this game. They're also on the road. They've been really good at home lately.
Who's it unfair to, though? I just want to dig into this a little bit.
I think it's unfair to the better team.
I think you answered it well. It's unfair because it's unfair to the coaches.
Yeah.
Because of the game plan.
Like Saints-Panthers have the same situation, and I feel like it puts the Saints in a worse position
than the
Panthers.
Right, the better team, I think, because it's just
– it evens the scale.
It's somehow – okay. Yeah, it does.
All right.
I'll give – there's no reason, though, the Seahawks should lose.
Wait, Greg, point taken.
Thanks, buddy. If they don't have Doug Baldwin, though, they are not the same passing attack, and you wonder if he's going to – he looked like himself for about 2 weeks this season. And then he was gone again. I mean, they had 70 yards passing, Russell Wilson did last week.
There is this amazing nugget on the Niners that they have forced 5 takeaways all season.
It's embarrassing.
And with 3 games to play, they can become the only team since at least 1940 to not force double-digit takeaways in a season. That includes teams like the Decatur Staleys. I mean, you know, the Duluth Triangles or something back then. There were teams.
Terrible team name.
Dayton Triangles.
The Dayton Triangles. I mean, those guys, the Dayton Triangles pulled off at least 10 takeaways.
A little bit of perspective.
Staley is like more of like a bend but don't break defense.
Well, they were great in the red zone. Staley's were the Chicago Bears for 2 years before they became the Chicago Bears.
To a little perspective to the Mark's nugget there. So they have 5 takeaways. There are 7 teams in the league this year that have had at least 5 takeaways in a single game.
Right. I mean, Xavier Howard has 7 takeaways. Give me a break.
He gone.
Seahawks, I love that they play. They're just so committed to their style, though. They play 6 offensive linemen so much. This is a game where they don't have to throw the ball much to win, you would think. You would think. But Kyle Shanahan, you never know.
I like to see them, like, maybe don't throw it once.
Let's see what the Seahawks
don't even throw it once.
I want to see.
Is that kind of like how sometimes you decide to try to not to speak for an entire segment? Mm. When you usually doesn't work out, but you usually have that plan every few shows or so not to say anything.
Well, there are a few games that would make sense this week.
It's like the year that the Panthers couldn't find a quarterback and they decided just to play D'Angelo Williams there for a while.
It's a little under the radar that Pete Carroll's Seahawks close in a very similar fashion when they're at their best. like the Patriots, that they've been so much better Thanksgiving on throughout the Pete Carroll era. Like, as much credit as we're giving them, it's like they might be even better than we think. If the defense is keeps improving, because it really hasn't been that
great.
That's
Frank Clark's defense now.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that if they keep getting better, like, you have to think about them as a team that could ruin some team seasons in the
playoffs. Yeah, and not ruin the Chiefs season, but if when they take care of business this week and they welcome the Chiefs into their building in week 16, riding a 5-game winning streak.
That's a fun one.
That is a tough game and another big test for Patrick Mahomes, but we'll get there. Let's move on. The New England Patriots, who last time we heard from them, Scott Zolak had become comatose due to the Miami Miracle, a 34-33 loss to the Dolphins. They now travel to Pittsburgh. This is, Mark Sessler, as close as you can get to a must-win game for the Steelers.
Yes, it is. There's a lot to talk about, but I'm going to just leave you with one specific prediction that I guarantee I nail.
Okay.
Steven Gostkowski misses a kick that goes down in Patriots infamy in this game. It's going to be an extra point or a field goal. I cannot quite decipher yet,
ooh,
but it's going to go down in ultra infamy. He had a missed kick last week.
Ooh.
He's not on top of his game right now. He's
at
feeling
two.
The jitters.
At two last
two
week.
Last week. He's going to have a killer gaffe in this game that's going to leave New England hobbled.
Whoa.
What do your spidey senses say about Chris Boswell, who kept his job this week?
I mean,
well, because I think that's the obvious one that you would think that about, but I think it's going to go the other way.
Oh, so that's factored in.
Yep.
I mean, it's not going to going to go down in infamy as much as his multiple missed kicks in Super Bowls. So I'll live with
that. That remains to be seen.
You haven't seen what's going to happen on Sunday, though.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those moments.
A debaculous fiasco. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Kai Forbath, who came in, flew in for a workout with Pittsburgh, it went so well that the Steelers told him, hey, hold tight.
What, don't leave town?
Hold tight.
They told him hold tight, but we're not signing you.
We're not signing you. Basically,
well,
they're saying –
couldn't have gone that well.
Honestly, they're saying if Chris Boswell misses one kick at all, probably – against the Patriots.
Wait, but he has to stay in town? Are they paying for, like, his hotel for the next 5 days? Or?
I don't know if it's literally, like, stay in the hotel room that we put you up in, but just realize we loved your workout because you're a really solid kicker.
It's
you're
like,
Kai's Kai.
I'd be a little worried if I was Boswell that he like, walks out of the parking lot and he's like, why are my tires
I'd love
slashed?
To be a kicker like, out of work that just gets put in a hotel for a week to see if maybe I get a job or none.
This like, is the most pressure, Wes, since Adam Vinatieri was told by Parcells, grabbed by the shoulder pads as he was jogging out on the field, if you miss this kick, you're cut.
And let's move
as
on.
As a rookie.
Don't you think there's something to be said for that? Like, if you can't take that pressure from the coach, how are you going to take the pressure of a close game?
That's why, and we joke about it on this podcast, but I am legitimately fascinated by the kicker position.
I am too.
Because it is so pressure-filled. It's intense.
I think it's the most pressure-filled outside of – golf is an individual sport, so you can't really compare. But I think in team sports, that got to be the most – mentally rigorous position.
Well, it's one of the reasons why I like the Patriots, you know, in this game, is that the special teams for the Steelers are awful. It's not just Boswell. It's the punting. It's the coverage units. It's awful. And the little details in a game like this, we've seen again and again. I'm just trusting Josh McDaniels and the Patriots offensive coaching staff to come up with a game plan that exposes Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh is a more talented team. But right now, the Patriots are healthier than they've been all season. Tom Brady looks better. I think coming off maybe his best performance of the season last week in Miami, other than the mental mistakes. Josh Gordon, I think, is looking better.
He looks like the old Josh Gordon starting in that Dolphins game.
He's, by the way, if you just paced out his stats for the Patriots, he's on pace for an 1,120-yard season with the Pats, like if it was 16 games. And he's becoming more integrated into what they do. They're running, their backfield is healthy. Like, they're a healthy team. I think they have as good a chance to put up points as they have all season right now.
If Tom Brady wasn't so afraid to take a hit right now, I'd say he's playing like he did in previous years. He certainly threw the ball really well last week. I thought that was the best he threw the ball all year. But after I watch him or Eli Manning play, I have to go watch a young quarterback.
He doesn't want to get hit.
No, they're so afraid to get hit.
But I think that's part of what makes him good. But I hear what you're saying, that maybe it's
it also
going
makes
too
him kind of bad.
Too far the other way. He doesn't take sacks. You know, he doesn't have negative plays. That's always
he gives up on plays too easily.
That is possible. And you look at the Steelers. I don't understand the Steelers because their lines are so good. The defensive line for the Steelers is playing great. Their offensive line, maybe the best in the league. Why are they losing?
James Conner sat out practice again on Thursday with that high ankle sprain. Steelers OC Randy Feichner said that he could play even without practicing, but it's more likely that if he doesn't get on the field at any point in practice, he's going to miss another game. We'll see what that means. And I will say one thing on this, gentlemen, that the Steelers, despite their slump, and I was all in on the Panthers figuring it out, and I was so mad at myself for missing that so badly. But then, you know what? I didn't know that Cam Newton's shoulder was banged up. So I'm going to let myself off the hook. I feel the same way about the Steelers. I feel like they're going to right the ship, and a lot of people are writing them off right now, I feel like. And this is – you know what this is, Wes?
This is a win-or-go-home game.
Kind of. And you know what else it is?
Must win?
It's a cornered animal game.
It's a statement game?
Mm.
It is a cornered animal game.
And the Steelers are a dangerous animal, cornered. The Patriots need the game too, but not nearly as much as the Steelers. And it did not feel right when I locked up the Patriots, although I looked in the mirror and I loved what I saw, Mark. I didn't like rooting for them that week, so it's time to get the scales back to even. Let's go, silver! I mean, gold, black and yellow. Let's go, Steelers! I'm locking it up! Oh, yeah. Come on, Greggy.
I love it. I hated when you picked the Patriots. This is the order restored to the world. I want you rooting against them.
Black and yellow, it's black
right.
and gold.
That's all pick it.
They're not silver. What are they? Black and gold?
Black I mean, and yellow. Black and yellow.
I am afraid because it's too – everyone's just saying – I mean, I was talking to, you know, Damashek and Emma VP who are Steelers fans. Like, they don't even like, –
Emma's a Steelers fan?
I don't know. Isn't she?
Is she?
Oh, Emma.
Yeah, she is.
Wait, she's from the region.
She's from there.
That's allowed.
Her dad's from Pittsburgh, too.
Yeah, that's
allowed. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, but they were
acting like, oh, there's no chance. Like, let's move on past this game. And once, let's get
I
to
mean,
week.
Damashek like, does that.
I know.
He's but, you.
But,
he's you.
But a lot
it
of
is annoying, right, isn't it?
Anthony Jeselnik, who I co-host the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project with, JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Yeah, we got to get it. You know,
I don't know why the word vanity feels slightly redundant in that title.
He thinks the season's over and that they have no chance to. It's ridiculous.
But they all think this for the same reason you have more faith in the Patriots, because they've seen their coaching staff get out-coached by the Patriots every time.
And I get it, but I also see a Patriots team who, like the... It's fair. The minute that you start having faith in their defense, the Dolphins go up and down the field on them. They have no pass rush whatsoever unless they call a blitz. And against Pittsburgh, that's a huge problem to me, that they're going to have to take chances to try to get after Ben Roethlisberger. He's going to have all day.
Who do the desert people like in this game?
I think it started slightly for Pittsburgh and then moved slightly to New England. Mm. So the fans,
awesome.
The fans like.
Let's New pick England. It.
I'm yeah. taking the Patriots. I'm not going to pick against
it. Like I said, it's going to come down to a Gostkowski disaster. It's going to be 29-27 Pittsburgh.
I'm taking the Steelers. I think that the Patriots are so much better at home than they are on the road. They've shown that this year. And the Steelers are a cornered animal. I agree with you, Dan.
Rookie Hollywood?
I'm going to go Patriots with a Gostkowski kick to end the game.
All right, let's move on to Sunday Night Football. Ah, oh, bummer. Let me flex this one out. I guess you can't.
Well, it's a little late.
It's the defending champions late in the game. The Eagles.
There weren't any good options either, I think, if they had even thought of it.
How about the game we just talked about?
That was protected.
I'm going to be at this. I'm going to be at this game, by the way.
Tell us more.
I just decided I'm going to go do that instead of doing this whole sit here for 4 hours and wait for, you know, till the end to talk about it for 2.5 minutes. I'm just going to go.
The Eagles.
So this is just a little made up Mark story. I was excited.
No, I'm going to do it. You can be fine without me for 1 week.
The Eagles are 6-7 after their loss to Dallas that really cooked them. They could not find a way to get past the Cowboys in Big D. And it's getting worse because now Carson Wentz, it was reported Wednesday that he had back spasms and it was going to probably keep him out this week. Now the report is that he has a fractured vertebrae and that could be the end of his season. So you're going to get Nick Foles, who is, not for nothing, the reigning Super Bowl MVP. But he didn't look like it when he played earlier in the season, Wes. Big test here against the Rams, who I assume are going to be hangry and youngry after that embarrassing Sunday Night Football loss against the Bears.
We're bringing youngry back?
Bring it back.
Hangry and youngry. We can't even call this a rematch, can we? The Eagles team is so much different than it was last year when Carson Wentz got injured in this game. I don't know.
Nick Foles did make like one throw at the end. I was at this game last year to win it. It is kind of amazing how
now it's my turn.
The two teams have turned since then.
I just loved watching Wes's face. What was happening there?
Well, I mean, what are we supposed to say? We believe in Nick Foles now?
No.
I mean, I didn't like what I saw early in the year when he was in there.
It's like we talked about yesterday. The Nick Foles was surrounded by a Super Bowl-type team last year.
Right. It's not like the Eagles' offense was lighting it up with Carson Wentz. I mean, he made some plays at the end of last week's game that was – if that was his parting shot for the season, it was almost nice to go out on a high note. If the Eagles' defense had stood up at the end of that game, who knows, we would be talking differently. And that's been the – it's been the case for the Eagles all year. When their offense does do something, their defense has given up a lot of late drives to lose games. I mean, think of the big blown leads that they've had, or their season could be different. But they're a very average team. There's no reason to think.
It has to be one of the more depressing Super Bowl follow-ups it wasn't just a team winning the third or fourth Super Bowl and then, oh, they have an off year. It was the most heightened experience in Eagles fan history. And then you followed up with a lot of the same characters, and you look a lot more like the team from 2 years ago, which was, 8-8 and ultra boring.
They look loaded and young and innovative. They've had a lot of injuries, though. I mean, they have had a ton of injuries. But you're right. I mean, I used this matchup to kind of revisit the whole Goff-Carson Wentz debate in QB Index, and just thinking how – not that – I think both – teams would do the same and they're happy, but how things change even sort of since that moment where, you know, Carson Wentz tore his ACL, Goff has taken another step up. I think since then, Wentz is physically talented. Everyone would certainly want him, but I think the Rams are happy with the guy that they've had, and he's been durable, and he's 2 years younger, and he's getting better every year.
Things do change fast. I read three articles last week about John DeFilippo as the hot head coaching candidate.
Right.
And I do want to, anybody that kind of writes off the Eagles now with Nick Foles behind center, I get it. But that remains what happened this time last year, really going into January more. One of the more stunning experiences to watch as an NFL fan ever. So is it completely impossible that he gets hot and they put up a fight here against the Rams? I don't think but I don't necessarily.
But what, not in terms
either.
Of your season, though, because you go from, well, it's Rams, then Texans, and then you're going to beat the Redskins. So what? So they go – they finish 8-8?
I think 8 wins might get you in this, because I think 7-8-1 might get you in for the Vikings at this stage. It seems possible. But I think it's a big game for the Rams because they've had two of their worst offensive performances of the season. They've certainly missed Cooper Kupp. The Lions maybe showed a little bit of a blueprint of roughing up their receivers at the line of scrimmage, which worked pretty well. The Eagles might not have the personnel to really pull off that strategy, but I think the Rams would feel a lot better if they can go put a 40 burger up or something like that, because their offense hasn't looked the same.
Can you imagine a world where Nick Foles does somehow win out? They go 9-7. They get into the playoffs.
Ooh.
Nick Foles takes them back to the Super Bowl and wins it again. Then you've got a little quarterback controversy.
I would think you would.
Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Finally, Monday Night Football. It is the 11-2 New Orleans Saints, who got back on track with the help of Taysom Hill and his blocked punt that sent them on their way to a 28-14 win over the Bucks. Greg, now they travel to Charlotte to face the Panthers. Panthers team in an epic free fall. They're now 6-7, riding a 5-game losing streak, playing a quarterback who can't throw.
You know what kind of game this feels like?
Injured bird game?
How about like a coach's last stand game? I mean, I feel like this is the last stand of the Ron Rivera era.
You think he's going to take the fall for Cam Newton's
I hope he
injury?
Doesn't, but that's, I think, the signals that David Tepper, the new owner, is sending in some ways by helping to, you know, forcing him to fire coaches and just some of the just reading the local reports. And that's what new owners do. They want new guys. Ron Rivera talked about it in the offseason that he felt more pressure coming into this season. He felt like his job was on the line. And his defense is the reason why they're so bad. It's not Cam Newton. I really don't – you know, I know Cam Newton's arm is off. Like, that's a fact. But he made a lot of really nice throws last week, too. He also missed plenty of throws, but I've seen Cam Newton miss throws his whole career. And he had some bullets. Like, he threw a 40-yard throw across the field to the outside late in the second. So I guess I'm confused about the injury, and I don't think his accuracy or his play is the reason they're 6-7.
I wonder if
I think it's that they have no pass
rush. I couldn't
rush.
Disagree with you more. I mean, his injury is obvious when you watch him play. He's not making the throws that he
– He's not making the same throws. But in that game, for instance, he made a number of solid throws, and if their defense had been playing better throughout
the stretch
– He's
not even as assertive as a runner right now because of the injury. I mean, I think he's changed his whole style of play.
I do wonder about that because there was the sequence on the goal line against the Browns at the end, and that almost felt like if that's it for Rivera and Turner, what a terrible way to go out. That goal line sequence where McCaffrey and Cam Newton – don't run the ball for three straight plays with the game on the line. Like, just didn't feel like the Panthers.
I don't point to Rivera as like this lingering year after year problem for the Panthers.
He's been great.
Like, if you get rid of him, you better know you're going to get someone. But there's all these coaches like the John Harbaughs and all these guys that were going to dump them and go find a new coach. It's like change for the sake of change because Rivera is not the guy.
I think it's just new owners want their own guy.
This is what bad franchises do, though. Then some guy comes in, you have to change your whole scheme to fit him, and then it's another 3 or 4 years, and you don't even have the right players for your scheme.
And not to mention, there are like 7 to 9 teams that could be looking to make a coach's change. Do you really want to get into that scrum? Yeah. And you're going to find someone that's definitely better than Ron Rivera's giving
especially
you?
When you have North Turner. And I don't think they – it wouldn't shock me if they win this game. I wouldn't pick them, but it wouldn't, like, stun me if they win this game. The Saints over the last 3 weeks, I don't think it's time to panic.
Okay.
But they're 31st out of 32 teams in yards. So that, to me, that seems like a problem. They're only been better than the Cardinals in terms of yards the last 3 weeks. So it's not, like, just 1 week. They didn't play well on offense last week, period. They need to fix the running game, which is hard for me to believe. They were the number one running game in the league last year, according to Football Outsiders. They're 8th in sinking right now. They haven't quite been the same. I'm not really sure why. They're not as deep on offense. They're a great defensive team right now. They're playing much better, but I don't know.
Sheldon Rankins made the damn leap.
Sheldon Rankins and Cam Jordan has backed up like his amazing season with one just as good. So they're a good team, but it's like I want to see those old Saints back.
They're fine.
And we should have a moment of silence, Ricky Hollywood, for Brandon Marshall, the veteran wide receiver who it looked finally at long last at the age of 34 after a decade plus in the league was going to at least appear in the playoffs. But the Saints parted ways with the wide receiver. He will not be playing January football. That's it. Sad.
I would say maybe they'd bring him back, but he didn't even play for them ever, did he?
The guy?
I don't think so, did he?
No.
Here's where it gets even worse. They cut him to make room for Eric Swope, who they claimed off waivers from the Colts.
Yeah.
Yesterday, and then today they dumped Eric Swope.
So was that just like a cover?
There is one way that Brandon Marshall could wind up in the playoffs.
Tell us.
Let's say a little team called the Cleveland Browns sign him, and let's say the Browns take out the Broncos like I know they will. You guys think I'm taking the Ravens as my lock? I'm locking up the Browns Saturday night.
Yes!
You clowns think I'm going to lock up the Ravens. I have never locked them up, and I will never lock them up.
Wow.
Wait, no.
That was great.
You know, though, you're changing because you didn't like that we gave you heat. That's all.
I do not want to hear about that because if I've only won 7 in a row, which goes totally silent on this show, I'm going
to
win 8 in a row.
I'm
going 8 in a row, and I'm not going to hear any nonsense about asterisks next to it and a bunch of malarkey by you guys.
You're
a little PR machine. It's a primetime game. I can get over it by Sunday morning if I lose this thing.
Way to own it.
By the way, you should have locked up the Browns in the first place. This is a great spot for your Brownies.
You will not critique now. You go quiet.
That worked.
Wow.
Well, not that I was trying to.
So that wasn't.
I fully enjoy locking up.
Wait,
the Browns.
Are you trying
this
to say
that worked?
Were you trying to say that was the plan the whole time? That it was
the
like
entire time.
Oh, look at his face.
Like I'm going to lock up the Ravens.
Okay,
but you know
it.
What?
I
like, there's
you.
Something. There's something cosmically wrong about me locking up the Ravens, and I don't like the whole energy around it. So I'm going with the team that I will die with if I need.
Well,
to. I don't really care.
And the good thing is, it's on Saturday, like you said. So. Right. We won't have to deal with any fallout if happens.
Well, you
might. Oh, yeah. Mark will be in a real chipper mood when Case Keenum drops a bomb on the Browns season.
But
I don't have a great feeling about the Browns game, but you know what? I haven't had a good read on them all year.
I want to recognize this as the Red Zeppelin Walla Walla that it is. It's a bold move. You're backing your team. And you're right. Cosmically, you don't belong attached to the Ravens.
Never.
Wes, always buying in.
That's a loyal friend. It's a great move. It shows strength.
I agree. It's a better lock. I agree.
but it's always a miracle.
Well, that took effort for you to agree.
But if he pulls it off, it's
just another.
It's prescient.
It's great.
It's just another gigantic moment for me this season.
And you deserve credit. If you don't think you're getting enough credit for that 7 in a row, that's a great run. That's got to be close to a record for a lockoffs.
I don't know what is. I don't know
what's
got to
be right around there. And I, since we're in this general conversation, before we get out,
I'm three into a season-ending 13-game winning streak that's going to have people remembering the Chris Carter run on ESPN.
What about '96?
I mean, like the Liam McHugh run from 2016 on NBC.
That went the
wrong
way.
Came back six back. It's happening.
Oh no! What if the Browns lose and the Ravens win on Sunday? Then we're in trouble.
I've got a lot of room and time to make it up. I'm not giving up with just being down by two, as you mentioned you were a couple days ago.
I'm in trouble, and it's a must-win situation. I'm the cornered animal as well in that game. But I want to bring up before we get out of here, Greg, the Rainmaker.
Has
he been retired?
Well, I'm a man who listens to criticism.
Hey, Dr. Rainmaker, let me in. No. Open up this door.
The Reddit
I
loves it.
I want my money now.
No, is that because of the slump? Has a date with your knees.
No, I really wanted to hear this
drop
again.
Here.
I wanted Dan to jump in.
You and your bozo friends are done for.
That's what we need.
You hear me? Open this door. He's got a gun.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I think Mark had made a really good point that it was taking up too much time of the show. And,
this is also
Dan,
nice.
Oh, this is
what's going on now?
And he's Dan, putting this on Sessler.
I didn't even
subreddit will come after Mark.
No, I didn't even bring
the
it up.
Subreddit is smarter.
And Dan,
than
that. No, you mentioned that it needed some more wins lately, and people are losing their money, and that's trouble. I mean, that's real life situation.
Well, hold on, Greg. You misheard my critique. My critique is not that the segment exists. It's that you were starting to do like three or four in an episode. I think we all felt like if you find one you were hanging your hat on,
love it.
Can enjoy I that.
Think, no, what's
that.
Going on? You're playing hard to get.
No, it was taking too.
Wes nailed it.
No, Greg, did you forget to do it?
Don't beg me to come back with the Rainmaker.
Did you simply forget to do it?
We also, you know, because of our success, we've had more advertisements, like the Los Angeles Country Club. I believe there was like the erotic.
How about this? I did not. I refused to read one of those ads this week. Because I wanted there to be space for your little thing. So
everybody's cooking up different theories about the situation. I love this.
I mean, yeah, it could have just.
I think Greg forgot to do it. That's my theory. He simply wanted to come to the end of the show.
Greg's way too political.
We'll have to see.
What he's doing here, he wants now everyone to come after us for ruining the segment that everyone else loves.
This is definitely
which is not true. I like the Rainmaker.
I would tell you on my children's lives that is not true.
What if Dr. Rosenthal was to put on his psychiatrist hat here? What would he say was the reason behind this?
Dr. Rosen. Who knows? I don't know. He's out of money right now.
All right. Well, you know, we'll see. We'll tune in next week. Maybe the Rainmaker comes back. Or maybe he's gone forever. That's it.
What if all of you listeners start begging, maybe he'll consider coming back.
There it is. The die has been cast. All right. Next time you hear from us, it will be all the Sunday games and Saturday games recapped. Thank you to everybody. And by the way, that subreddit is up to 10,000 strong now, which is really a credit to our audience and how loyal and awesome you guys are, in addition to everything else. We have the best list of any podcast both in this building, and I'm going to put it up against any other podcast. What fans we have.
6,200 of them, according to this, are bots, but that's fine.
That's fine.
Still leaves you with 3,800 real people.
Absolutely. All right, let's get out of here. Dan Hans is signing off for Quiet Storm. Ricky, see, you just parachuted into this huge hit podcast. Isn't it great?
It's amazing. At Tamposi NFL.
All right, everybody. Till Sunday night.